This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hi, friends. This is Tim McKenna, and this is another episode of Signal 337. It is February 2020, and about 8 o'clock at night at the time of recording this episode. I had a really interesting conversation with a good friend of mine today around branding and our shared backgrounds of coming up through the advertising and branding realm of design and then making the transition more into user experience and product design. And it was really interesting because the conversation was around like what we call the quote-unquote good old days, where we didn't have to worry about users and our products being functional. We just had to create a brand. And it was really interesting that the conversation took that kind of turn, because when I really think about it, working on brand building, it was fucking hard. It was not something that you could just instantly churn out. And I think that's where part of our conversation was going, was that there was kind of this naivete, this innocence when we were coming up through our respective careers, that creating a brand was way easier than the product side. And when I really think back to it, it was just a different set of headaches. It was a different set of practices and how we approach things. So tonight, I want to kind of expand upon this and talk about branding and what makes a good brand. And I think over the course of this episode, you will really understand as well that a brand is not a logo. A brand is not your marketing plan. A brand is not your short-term gains. A brand truly is your reputation. So let's get into it. I wanted to really start off with what a brand is. Like, what's the definition of a brand? And surprisingly, or rather unsurprisingly, is that defining what a brand is actually is pretty damn hard to do. So let's take a look at what Wikipedia says. First thing, when you look up Wikipedia and you go and you type in branding, what is a brand? So Wikipedia says, a brand is a name, term, design, symbol, or any other feature that identifies one seller's good or service as distinct from those other sellers. That's incredibly narrow definition, in my opinion. I don't think that a brand is a name, a term, a design, a symbol. I think it's all of those things. I think it's a little bit of everything. And are you necessarily selling something? Well, in essence, we all are. We're all trying to sell something, whether it is our worth, our time, whatever. It may not always be a monetary transaction, but we're all trying to sell something. It is trying to create a distinction from the other brands that are out there. So here's what I kind of define as a brand, is that a brand is a reputation, something with identifiable qualities and characteristics and values. And that is, I think, a much more succinct definition, but I am definitely open to more conversation around the definition. But here's my view on what a brand is. And first and foremost, this is where I think a lot of small businesses, and in fact, many large companies get this wrong, is that a logo is not a brand. A logo is just a visual representation, something that is created to help visualize your brand. And what I find is that a lot of designers pretty early in their careers, when they're coming up through commercial art, graphic design, advertising, and marketing, is that they get the distinction of what a logo and a brand is conflated. They put them together. I'm not to say that logos aren't important. I really believe that a logo, a mark of some sort, is incredibly important, and our entire human history is filled with symbols that evoke certain qualities or certain thoughts and feelings. So a logo is incredibly important, but is not the be-all, end-all of a brand. So, what really makes up a brand? Well, I believe it's a combination of several different factors. If you're creating a company, what is your company's values? What do you hold dear? What are the things that your company stands for? And I say company in the loosest terms here because it could be, you know, a nonprofit organization, could be a for-profit company, could be academia, could be government, could be anything, could be an individual. But what are the values that define this brand? What are the beliefs that this brand is trying to espouse? What are the things that it's trying to do in the world? So values are very intrinsic in how they hold themselves, and beliefs are what they kind of aspire to. As we get a little bit more niche, we look at the promises that a brand is going to make to the consumer. Here I'm using a marketing-y buzzword right here. Is that what is a consumer? Well, anyone who's taking in any of the information from that brand, whether it is, again, a monetary transaction, whether it is you're following a YouTube channel, or you happen to espouse to a certain belief system that this person or company is putting out, what are its promises to those consumers? Why should those folks continue to follow you? You may have put together some sort of promise as to what your goals are, what you're going to do for those people, for them to continue to follow you. How does the brand hold up those promises? As a company, you may have a promise that you're always going to deliver top-notch service to your customers. Say maybe it's through support or phone calls, emails, whatever. You're going to promise to deliver world-class, top-notch service. Okay, how do you do that? And then how do you go about doing those things? So say you are a company and you provide a software as a service platform. You create the ability for other companies to use your platform, use your software. And when you have issues with your software and your customers are coming back to you, well, one of your promises is you're going to provide world-class support, top-notch service. Okay, how do you do that? What are the tactics that you would use to deliver on that promise? And then lastly, I believe that this is a very important part of the brand building schema for everything is how do you evangelize yourself and how do your customers or your consumers evangelize you? In the marketing world, this is referred to a lot as word of mouth or other marketing tactics. Like, how do you get your brand name out there? How do you get exposure and awareness? And there are a myriad of ways of getting exposure. Probably have heard the old adage, there's no such thing as bad PR. Good PR is great, bad PR is great. It's just public relations. It gets your name out there. So I think that these five things, a company or an organization or a person, the values that they have, the beliefs that they have, that they hold true, the promises that they make to their group, whether it's consumers, followers, customers, whatever, the promises that they make through their values and beliefs, how they then will hold up those promises, and then how they are evangelized. I believe all of those intrinsic qualities are what really makes a brand. And then you can go into, okay, what does the brand look like? How do we visualize this? And that's where your graphic designers and your marketing folks can really come into play. But if you don't have these things figured out first, kind of starting off on the wrong foot. Let me talk about an example. Years ago, when I worked in advertising, I worked for a company called PPO&S in Harrisburg. And I got to work under an amazing creative director, Joe Kniezek. He had I think at the time, 30 years of experience in the industry. This is a master's degree from Syracuse University. And one of the papers that he wrote was about cross-generational marketing and messaging. And he thought that the whole generational marketing and messaging tactics were kind of bullshit. He was like, you know, regardless of your age, there are some intrinsic things that we all espouse to, we all center on. This gentleman was fantastic, and I really looked up to him as my creative director. And one of the first things he taught me, even after I had been in the industry for a while and I had done some brand building and whatnot, is he really, really wanted me to focus on when I was creating a logo for this one company that was actually merging 9 different organizations into one company. We were doing a rebrand, or really, in a way, creating a new brand out of all these different organizations. We centered on a name because that's what they wanted to continue with the familiarity, but he really wanted me to focus on what should their customers feel like when they are interacting with this company. Now, what was the company? It was hospice, home care, elderly care, and you know, those types of services. This was something new for me. I never worked in that industry, in that part of the healthcare realm. And there were several different organizations that were all coming together, and we had to create a succinct, very fluid brand around what they were trying to do. So very little of what my team and I did was doing kind of the logo work. Honestly, that took a long time, but we really focused on, with all these different companies coming together and becoming one company, what was going to be lost in the translation? Now that it's one big company, is it going to be a faceless organization? What were the promises that they were centering on for their residents, for their patients? How were they going to deliver those promises to those patients, to the families of those patients? And how are they going to uphold their beliefs in everything that they did? So we worked with the CEO who was under the merging of all these organizations. We worked with him quite frequently to really come up with the messaging and talk about what it is that this new company would be doing, how they are still a familiar face in the market, but they've just grown to be able to offer more. We worked on the values. We worked on the beliefs. And we worked on how they would do their messaging to their consumers. All of that work informed my job and my team's job on the design team to come up with logo, come up with an identity, come up with a style guide. And that company was Spirit Trust Lutheran out of South Central Pennsylvania. It was a fantastic exercise in really delving into what makes this company tick? Why did they merge? Why did they come together? What was their purpose? My old cynical self at the time was like, oh, it's just more money. We're going to have a greater market share. And while they said that, okay, there's a strategic point to that, but because they were all kind of interconnected previously, they thought this could actually provide better care. And I really honed in on that. The coming together of very disparate wings of the business to have a coordinated care effort, a coordinated promise to their residents and their families. That really resonated with my team. And when we actually began the work of building an identity system for them that included logos and logo lockups and everything, it actually became pretty easy to do that portion. And I say easy with quotes around it because it still was a fucking lot of work to do. We went through iteration after iteration of what really best describes this brand. When you look at this logo, do you get that? Do you understand? Like, what's the first things that you see with this logo and how's that translated into your head? And we got very psychological on the whole process. But what we ended up delivering to the client was a very succinct brand package that was built with the customer, built with our client. It was built with understanding the market. And it was also built centered around their promises about how we can provide more coordinated care. And I mean, hats off to former employer. PPONS did a great job. I had a great team that I worked with. I learned a lot there. And it was a fantastic experience. And Spirit Trust Lutheran is still around if you are in South Central Pennsylvania and you can look them up. It was a project that I was very proud to be a part of. But I would say that 80% of the work before we ever got to logos and visual guides was all about what were the promises? What is going to distinctly translate from your values and beliefs as something that we can show and have people center on? How were you different from the rest of the elderly care facilities in the area? So it was incredibly important for us to do that work up front and center that on some truth that then they could actually keep this brand going. And that was the longevity they wanted. They wanted this to be a company that's going to be here for another 40 years, as they already were. They want to go for another 40 years and continue further and further. They wanted to be there for the long haul. And as those organizations came together, the brand changed, but it still focused on its values. So it really shaped my approach of how I look at brands today. So one of the things I want to talk about then is how do brands change over time? Because that's fine. Brands do. Brands can change. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, and sometimes just from how the rest of the market kind of views them. So this is a time-honored example because they're always brought up, but I'm probably going to look at them in just a little bit of a different light, is Apple. Apple instantly evokes a lot of different ideas. You probably think of Apple as superior, sleek, easy to use, integrated. Oh, there's that X factor that it's got. There's a lot of things that Apple does differently from Microsoft or Dell or Lenovo. If you look at how Apple kind of brands themselves, they still brand themselves as the everyday person's computer. This is the everyday person's technology company. But they've elevated in a way that they now have this, what I call the Burberry effect. It is the elites as well. But to have an Apple device with the rose gold finish, that's much better than your crappy little MP3 player. Or the new iPhone X is the standard of which we all kind of grade each other's mobile devices with. Having the new Apple computer is just bee's knees for everything. And it's really interesting because not that long ago, Apple wasn't like that. You look back in the 90s when Apple was starting to really grow and starting to become like a thing. You know, the Mac World conferences and the Apple computing user groups, they were just as fucking nerdy as anything else. They weren't the, oh my God, this is the Cadillac of personal computing. It was the nerdy groups thing. But their message still never changed. This was the computing power for everybody. This was the liberator for everyone to use a computer because they always made everything in their software and their hardware easy to use. So if you look at Apple from the 90s and how they've kind of messaged themselves and how they've kind of grown now to be this more luxury computer brand, while they have different tactics and different approaches now, their core message of creating the best products they possibly can, the most easy to use interfaces and something that anyone can enjoy, that's never changed. It really has never changed. But if you look at the visuals and look at how Apple has evolved over time, you might look at them as two completely distinct companies, just sharing the same name. But I bring this up because recently I actually watched a Sandra Bullock movie, The Net, from way back in the day. And it was funny because in the movie, she was at a Macworld conference at the end and she uploaded this virus on a disc and completely nonsensical kind of a thing. But it was interesting because I got to see some of that early Mac and Apple branding. And, you know, the Apple logo, has just slightly changed over time. It's become more and more refined, but it's still recognizable. But truly, their brand perspective, their promise of delivering world-class software and technology so that anyone can use, has still never changed. So, talking about what makes a good brand, let's define the word good. What is good? Are we talking the altruistic good versus evil, or are we talking about, does good mean effective? Does good mean consistent? Does good mean bold or fluid or honest? These are all qualities and traits that could really define what good is. When you really think about it, are they all that super different? You might look at bold and think, well, that's antithesis to consistent. Bold ideas, always moving forward, progressing, versus something that's consistent, reliable, and will always be there for you. They don't have to be antithesis. And this is where, when you are creating a brand, what I like to use are the brand archetypes that are taken out of Carl Jung, a psychologist's, his work, and creating what type of brand qualities and traits that are espoused through literature and art. So if you're not familiar with Jungian archetypes, this was a set of observations that were seen in art and stories of different character types. You had the ruler who was a step above everybody and was wise, and when it had could have a negative connotation of being my way is the highway. You have the sage, which was incredibly knowledgeable and wise and evoked a certain air of mystery around them, but also had the negative connotation of not being exactly forthright or approachable. You had the jester, which was fun and flirtatious, but it was also seen as something you can't ever take seriously. You know, so on and so forth. And there are 12 archetypes for the Jungian side. And what happened was in the 30s that those archetypes were then put into the lens of marketing and talking about brand, how different brands can actually fit into these different archetypes. And it's really interesting information around the brand archetypes, because those who do it well really espouse those different traits. You look at Harley Davidson, probably one of the first words you think of is rebel or rebellious or freedom. Well, that's the rebel archetype. When you think about the magician archetype, someone who creates magic and wonder, well, that's Disney to a T as well. And what these brands, these companies and organizations have done is to really focus in on what their values, their beliefs, their promises to their consumers, their followers, and really turned it up to 11, really became and embraced that archetype. And these different qualities around good, effective, consistent, and bold, what the archetypes do is to help give a little bit more of a framework of what is, quote-unquote, on-brand for them, but doesn't mean that you have to completely follow suit with every single paradigm with those things. It's actually possible to have two brand archetypes and to really kind of sit in both worlds. When I was working at FHEA, Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, when we're going through some of the branding and the messaging of how we were talking with our borrowers and Pennsylvanians, we did a brand audit and wondered how people were actually interacting with us. We mapped brand archetypes to two. We were incredibly wise, and we were considered the king for everything. And they had some good qualities to them, but it was just how they were being enacted that caused a lot of heartache for consumers. When we looked at where we wanted to be at and grow the brand presence to, we looked at caregiver and sage. We looked at those as like, we're very knowledgeable and we're here to help you. So those were the qualities, the values, the beliefs, the promises that we were trying to really espouse when I was there. And I think that if you find those qualities, find those beliefs, something that you hold true, it becomes incredibly easy for you to enact those promises, those tactics to build a good brand. Because if you really think about it, these things I'm talking about, aren't they just really qualities that people should have or aspire to? Are they really the same? When I think about different brands, I think about them in ways that I actually describe people in a lot of respect. Case in point, I am from Central Pennsylvania, and there is a growing debate that we all love to talk about in Central PA. Do you like Sheetz or do you like Wawa? And if you're not from Central PA, you're probably like, what the fuck are those two things you're talking about? So, background. Sheetz and Wawa are both convenience stores. They have a gas station. They make food inside. They have coolers and freezers. You can get whatever snacks. And you're probably wondering, if you're not from this area, why does that matter? It's just a place where I go to get gas and go to the bathroom and get a soda and be on my merry way. Well, Sheetz and Wawa are arguably some of the leading convenience stores in the nation, and they have many imitators. You can even make the argument, and this area loves to talk about who does it better, who's imitating who. Sheetz is from more the Western Pennsylvania side. Wawa is more from the Eastern Pennsylvania side. They have different markets. They do overlap in some areas, but the basic premise of what they do is the same. They both have gas. They both have a made-to-order food station where they have employees making food based off of orders that come in from order point screens. And their customer focus is the same. Provide the best customer service to everyone who walks in that door and make them want to come back because you treated them the best that they had all day. Now, I have experience definitely more on the Sheetz side because I worked for Sheetz for 10 years. And it was an interesting kind of evolution of how Sheetz has grown to always include the total customer focus. How can they supply the best customer service to everyone who walks in every one of those convenience stores? As an interloper then, when I lived in Philadelphia, I was going to a lot of Wawa's, and while their food offerings were different, and a little bit, it was the same mentality. So they both have very similar brand promises. They both have very similar tactics, values, and beliefs. And what happens is, through their continuous work of creating an experience for their customers, you have this brand loyalty that has cropped up. I believe Johnny Knoxville from the show Jackass actually has a Wawa tattoo. Hey man, to each their own. But, you know, he's from out that area. And he has many, you know, fond memories of going to Wawa for everything. And regardless if it was a joke or not, he still has it. And talk about brand loyalty from there. If you look at the same idea, but a different realm, think of every band that you've ever heard about. And there's some person who probably has a band tattoo. That's some brand loyalty right there. But you have people that will imitate brand. You have organizations that will try to ride your coattails. So Sheetz and Wawa have both been around for a long time. 60 years, I believe, each of them, maybe give or take a few years from when they both started. But there's another Central Pennsylvania darling convenience store that is, I believe, a huge imitator. And that's Rutter's convenience stores. They have the same colors as Sheetz, red and gold. And they also have order points, and they also have gas. But I think where the difference is that they try to imitate, they try to outdo, but their customer focus isn't the same. I know from my own training working at Sheetz that customer training is incredibly important, and it is actually tied to their secret shops. And I know the same thing is true for Wawa. And what happens is that people I interact with at Sheetz who are in a uniform, they are really a cut above. But when I go into Rutter's, I feel like I'm just, oh, yeah, hey, you're here. You pay stuff. Cool. I feel like I'm a nuisance. And I feel like when I order food that I'm actually just, you know, bugging the people back there. They could be doing other things. So you will have imitators that will try to ride the coattails and see what you do tactically and try to imitate that. But if they do not hold the same values and beliefs and their promises, they pale in comparison. So that's just a little Central PA brand identity warfare kind of going on. And for the record, I'm a Sheetz guy. So there's that. So I've talked a lot about branding, and I've talked a little bit about companies and the different things, but are brands only subject to companies and organizations, more than one person? Could a brand also be focused on one person? Absolutely, this is true. And I feel like there is a difference between a personal brand and the cult of personality. Very different viewpoints, very different ways that they present themselves and how they go about creating themselves. So I have a list of some folks that I think are great at their own brand. They have created their own brand and have become very intertwined with it. Very early on in college, I learned about Jeffree Star, makeup artist and media personality. And he's built his career, built this brand around him with his audacious and over-the-top, flamboyant, just no-holds-barred personality. Just fantastic way how he presents himself. He's done this over at least 14 years I've known about him through media appearances and really intricate partnerships that help to create and evangelize, you know, Jeffree Star as a brand. Jessica Alba is someone that I look up to from a branding perspective because she went more the traditional route. She created a company called The Honest Company, and they had a very pure purpose of creating honest products and stuff that was environmentally safe and very conscious of the environment and that were just good for you. And she made a big change from being just a pure actress, but she made that all that star power and the capital that she gained from her previous career, she really honed in and focused on creating The Honest Company. And she's so intrinsically tied with it that you almost couldn't understand one without the other. But the way that she had branded The Honest Company tells you a lot about their promises, their beliefs, and how they are going to interact with you. So if at any point in time where she decides to step away from everything, that brand will continue to grow and be successful as long as they hold true to their promises. Because the first time that The Honest Company proves to be dishonest, they've lost it. They have absolutely lost it. Another one, and this is probably really funny for me bringing up because I have very little hair, Paul Mitchell. Paul Mitchell Studios, Paul Mitchell Salon, 40 years of hair care products, the stylist and creator of many hair products. And I mean, almost you can't take away what he's done. He and his partner have done over the last 40 years. When you hear Paul Mitchell and you walk into any salon, you're going to see their products everywhere. Anyone who's into hair care, again, not me because I have very little of it, but anyone's into hair care, they're going to instantly know the Paul Mitchell brand. They're going to instantly know the name. That brand has been built up over the years, and that's been through 40 years of making products, 40 years of ad placement, 40 years of appearances, partnerships with different folks. It has been a very successful brand and continues to be a very successful brand to this day. And it was all centered around Paul and his partner. Now, here's one that I'm going to throw in as maybe a cult of personality, but Banksy. Banksy is a very famous artist, known for not being known. I've never seen what he looks like. And he's incredibly audacious. I like to call him kind of like the punk rock artist in a lot of respects because his views on society and marketing and our stupid adherence to the media and brands in a lot of respects, he kind of turns it over his head and tries to wake us up with his work. And he's very well known in the art world. And I wonder if, is this now crossed over to being a brand, the Banksy brand? Or is he still technically a cult of personality where people are drawn to Banksy and his work because of what he represents. And where does that line, that distinction between brand and cult of personality really begin and end? I think that the real definition of a cult of personality is fleeting. He has all the earmarks and the looks of a brand, but the longevity, I believe, is very short-lived, and I believe it's also marked by high passion as well. And when I think about cults of personality, I actually think about political candidates. And if you look at the current American political system with the candidates and our current president, that's what they truly are. They really aren't a brand. They are a cult of personality. And they will have their time, and then they'll go away. And when you think about them as a brand, are they really trying to put themselves up like that? I'm not sure. I don't think so. If I was to say there was a brand for anything, I would say the United States could technically have a branding application or a branding kind of a thing. But now we're getting into realms that are kind of philosophical and kind of moving off the topic. But I want to get back to individuals. So another individual, and this is an interesting one because I'm actually a big fan of his clothing line and his metalcore band, but Johnny Cupcakes. Johnny Cupcakes is known as a clothing designer, and he came out of a metalcore band and created this persona, Johnny Cupcakes, from after a nickname, and he created a clothing line while he was still in his band on Broken Wings. And over time, he made the transition and very recognizable clothing line. And John Earl, the Johnny Cupcakes, really interesting. I mean, when you think about Johnny Cupcakes as a brand, sure, it makes total sense, but it's really that person. So interesting ways that a person then moves into this thing that could actually be then removed from the person. Very much like Jessica Alba in this regard. So let's move into something else, a little bit different. Finn McKinty, the punk rock MBA. I've been following his work now for 5-6 months. And he's a YouTuber, a commentator on different music scenes, movements. He also has a second channel around business and marketing and basically telling you all the things that you need to hear if you want to be actually making money as a business, as some sort of professional. And it's really interesting because he started off just talking about music. You know, what killed metalcore, how the rise and fall of pop punk. And the way that he does this is through some very poignant, like well-researched topics around different bands, what influenced them, and how they came up to being. And that became his platform then to start his podcast, the Punk Rock MBA podcast, his second channel. I've actually learned through him about Cadence Leadership Coaching and those folks there. It's really interesting. And I don't know if he's really thought about it, but he's starting to build a brand for himself. And if you look at it, there's the Punk Rock MBA. It is intrinsically tied to him. So you look at his Twitter, it's Finn McKinty and at Punk Rock MBA. He's part and parcel to everything. And I'm really interested to see how he's going to continue to grow his fan base because he's very open about his values and his beliefs, his promises to his followers. And he continues to grow and will become eventually a brand of some sort. And then I like the segue into this because Finn McKinty is a small-time operator. He's a company of one, and that goes perfectly into Paul Jarvis. Paul Jarvis is, well, he's a man of many talents. Designer, author, business consultant. He's a small business operator in a lot of respects. He's got several different products. Fathom Analytics is a great product that he has. I used to have almost all of his WordPress themes, and I read all of his stuff voraciously, and he is such a proponent of being small and finding what you really need to be successful in life. So it's not the same old typical, grow, and scale and be big. He's really like, what do you really need to do in your life to be successful? His book, A Company of One, fantastic read, and really changed my outset, my kind of look at everything as a freelancer, and also helped me to understand what is it I actually need to be happy with? What am I looking for everything? This next gentleman is the complete opposite of Paul in many ways, and he is loved and hated simultaneously. And you might even feel that same way, both ends of the spectrum in the same week. And that's Gary Vaynerchuk. What does he do? There's VaynerMedia. There's all the work that he's done. He's a business consultant, speaker, author. He's constantly making different deals with folks. Brand and marketing guy. Like, the guy does everything. In fact, I'm pretty sure he is just pure cocaine at this point because he is just constantly on. And he got his start years ago on a YouTube channel, the Wine TV Guy, where he was helping his parents' liquor store, the wine shop in New Jersey. And he would do short, simple YouTube videos about different wines and how they, you know, where they came from and you know, how they pair well with different food. And he did that shit for years before he ever got quote unquote noticed. But throughout that time, he was continuing to learn. He was continuing to build his savvy and intrinsically the Gary Vaynerchuk brand is all about how you can become a successful person, a successful individual. And he is constantly about passion and focusing on what you're good at and cutting through the bullshit in life. While that sounds intrinsically similar to Paul, how they go about it, their different mindsets are very different. So that was a list of individuals that have their own brand presence. And what do they all have in common? They all have their own promises. They all have their own beliefs and values. What they offer to their base, whether it's consumers, followers, whomever, they all offer something that connects with them. And they do something to always make sure they continue to connect with them. And through their work, they are evangelized through their consumers, through their followers. Finn McKinsey's a YouTuber. He's evangelized through other people like me who like different types of music. Like, hey, check this guy out. Jessica Alba, completely different approach. More traditional company kind of a branding. But the customers who really like her products are adherents, ravenous adherents. Paul Jarvis is a consummate writer. He is constantly writing about business and what makes you happy and adhering to what's true to you. And he's so honest and direct with all this stuff that it resonates with a certain type of audience. That same audience may not resonate with Gary Vaynerchuk's message, but there is some intrinsic qualities that do share between them. So these individuals have brands that they have created around them. And I love this quote by Gary Vaynerchuk because I think regardless of what your brand is, I think that this really sums it up. And he said, no matter what you do, your job is to tell your story. And I read years ago, like every company now is a media company. You're always pushing your own stuff out. That's true. But I really like this quote because I think it's such a simplistic view that really hits home. It's very impactful. No matter what you do, your job is to tell your story. And that's a call to action of you. What is your values? What are your beliefs? How do you hold those true? How do you share that with people? And how do you follow up with it? So when you were talking about building a brand, say you are a small business owner, or maybe you've been doing this for a while and you've had a company and you really never thought about what your brand is really like or how it's viewed. I like to put through this exercise of think about your brand if it was a person and they were sitting right across from you. How does that person project themselves? How does that person communicate to you? How does that person make decisions? What drives them? What won't that person do? And if that person was faced with a situation, a mistake, what would they do to fix it? And you can go on and ask these very personal questions, but I think that's a good starting point, is if you think about your brand as a person, answer these questions, write them down, and start to build your promises. Start to build your values and your beliefs. And from there, it becomes very easy to start looking at that visual identity, that logo. Because really, it's not about logos. It's not about a slick website. It's not about an app. It's honestly not your short-term marketing. Building a brand is about building trust. And it takes a long game to play it correctly. So with that, I want to end on this because this is something that I don't really do all that often anymore. It's something that was pretty much my entire career when I first started as a designer. And as I made this transition into user experience, I do think about brand because I do think about how someone uses a product and how that completely unfolds into the entire customer experience. And that's where I feel like user experience and branding can really work together. But I want to end on this because I could literally spend the next 3 hours talking about branding, and I can talk about everything from perspectives, audiences, building audience profiles, all that stuff. So I'm going to save all that for future episodes. But I am incredibly curious to hear from you about how you view brands. When you think about brands, what are the brands that you follow and why do you follow them? Why are you a customer of theirs? Why do you spend the time to focus on them? You know, in time, this damn podcast could be its own brand by itself. Who knows? I mean, I'm only going to be 10 episodes in at this point, but who knows what the future is going to be like. But my own brand promise with everything is this is the podcast for the innately curious and the creative. If I start doing macrame podcasts and talking about baking, well, might be curious about it. It's kind of creative, but I'm really focused on the business and the design and leadership side of everything. So if I was to completely move away from that, or even better yet, I start a podcast about, you know, fixing hardware, that might be completely off brand. So the goal is this. I'd like to hear you guys talk about this. Shoot me a tweet. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Let's have a conversation. And let's do hashtag what is a brand. Let's do that. Let's have a conversation around it. I am immediately curious if you are a designer, if you're a marketing person, if you work in the industry, so to speak. I'd like to hear your thoughts and opinions on this. If you are a business owner and you are thinking about this now, really for the first time, or you've been very successful at this and building a brand persona, let's talk about that as well. And with that, let's have a conversation. So again, I really appreciate you taking the time, listen to this episode, and spend some time with me because it truly means a lot to me that you spend any time with me at all. And also, again, I mentioned a few places that I worked at. Everything is still from my head. Everything is still my own perspective and everything, and nothing is indicative or any of my past companies that I've worked at or presently. It's all just my perspective and the things, though I will always give shout-outs to people who have helped me in the past and different organizations that I've worked at that made a huge difference in my life. So with that, have a good night.